Hello.
Hello. And welcome to Spectral Science, the science podcast where we explain science. I'm very excited to do this and get the first episode out.
Yeah, me too. It's been a long time. Well, it's not been a long time, but we've put a lot of
pressure. Yeah, this is a good project, I think, for the two of us to undertake. Why don't we do a little intro about ourselves to kind of get the ball rolling, get started, and yeah.
Yeah, sounds very good. I can start if you want.
You can start.
So, hi everyone. Hi, Charlotte.
Hello, our three listeners. How's it going?
I'm Linda, and I am a PhD student at Imperial College London. Mm-hmm. And my research is in experimental astroparticle physics, which is a bit of a mouthful, honestly.
Big words.
But I just basically see whether dark matter exists or not.
Yeah, I'm excited to hear about this. That is next episode. we're starting with me on breaking the ice.
Yes. But prior to being a PhD student, I was in Edinburgh for 5 years where I did my undergraduate and master's.
And that was in physics.
Physics, yeah.
Yes. And you loved Edinburgh.
Right? I love Edinburgh. It's so good.
It's a very nice city. Yes. I feel like I could die in Edinburgh.
You could die?
No, like, I would want, like, my bones to lay to rest there. Again. Do that make sense? Do you ever think about that? Is that? No? Okay.
I would like my alive bones to rest in Edinburgh.
I'm Charlotte. I am from Cheshire in North England. And I did biological sciences at university. I am currently working in oncology clinical research, but in my undergraduate and my master's I did specializations in kind of molecular biology and microbiology. I did like quite a broad, I worked with Drosophila, which are like tiny little fruit flies. Aww. And I worked in industry at a biotech investigating viral vectors, which maybe I'll talk about at some point because it is quite interesting. So I asked Linda to do this podcast with me because I wanted to learn more about physics. I know nothing about physics. I feel like I probably know less physics than you know biology.
No, I think so. I think it's common knowledge that people don't know physics or just like people are scared of physics, but everything you do is physics, right?
Yeah, but it's like all very small. That's my understanding. Lots of tiny things. So basically the premise of this is each episode we're going to explain a scientific concept that the other doesn't know anything about in an attempt to kind of expand our knowledge and also just do a nice little project together because I don't feel like I understand what you do. and I don't know if you understand what I do. I guess we'll find out.
Yeah.
So we're going to talk about a couple of things. We're going to start with epigenetics in our first episode and see where we go from there.
Yeah.
So I think we're going to do an icebreaker question, weren't we?
Oh, yeah.
But I accidentally told you my icebreaker question earlier.
But you always come up with great questions, though.
That's very kind. Oh, no, the pressure's on me. I need to think of another one. Okay. I was going to ask, what is your favourite constellation?
My favorite constellation, I think, is like Orion's Belt.
I say that as if I know any. What's the plough? That's one, isn't it?
Yeah. What the big plough is like the main
big
one.
Plough. Oh, sorry. I thought Orion's Belt is pretty basic. Should we get started?
Yeah.
Should we give it a go? So, when I describe epigenetics to you, what is the first thing that comes into your mind?
I don't know what's the first thing that comes to mind. It actually is the book Lessons in Chemistry.
Ah, okay. Yes.
Because I thought she was researching into epigenetics, but actually I Googled just before and it's not.
Okay. So it's a clean slate then. So not a huge amount of knowledge into epigenetics.
No, I guess there is the word genetic. So it means like transverse regeneration.
So it's sort of related to your DNA. So I think the easiest way for me to explain how epigenetics works is if your DNA is a set of instructions or a manual, epigenetics are kind of like little notes that you've written in the margins, and these can be like rubbed out or rewritten. And they affect the way that your manual, your instructions, your DNA is carried out.
Okay.
So you were talking earlier about baking a cake.
Yes.
And it would be like, if the, let's say you move into a new flat and the oven that you've got isn't hot enough, so you have to write in the margin, it says 180 degrees in the instructions, but do 200 or something.
Actually, yeah, change over. But then if I change flat again,
if you change
flat, I can rub it again and so make another one.
You would rub it out and then rewrite it in.
Okay.
So does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
So DNA is a set of instructions that don't change, but your epigenetics change how these instructions are carried out. And this like partially relates to, so you know how like, we're built up of cells, and your heart cells know to be heart cells. Mm-hmm. So this is partially in like specialization, but that's actually a really complicated process, and it's not what I'm going to talk about today. What I specifically want to talk about today is how these notes in the margins, our epigenetics, actively affect your health and your life, and as you're living, and these change the way that your DNA is expressed, in terms that it can have lasting effects on your health, and it can contribute to like a lot of different things. So like addictive mechanisms, it can affect your metabolism. One of the really interesting things it can do in recent emerging studies is it's shown that it can affect whether you develop cancer. So these little epigenetic notes will change and fluctuate based on your environment and your life and your choices. So does that make sense so far?
Yeah, it does make sense. It's kind of ominous in a good way. Yeah. I feel like I need to live a good life so that my epigenetics is good.
I thought I'd give you some kind of examples, right? So have you heard of the TV show The Biggest Loser? I think I might have mentioned it to
you. Yes, I think you mentioned it to me. But please refresh my memory.
So The Biggest Loser is a... I think it's an American TV show. I think they also have it in Australia, actually, where the winner is the person that can lose the most weight proportional to their body mass. So it's generally obese people will go on this weight loss show, and they will try, each week they'll have weekly weigh-ins, and they'll try to lose as the most out of everyone.
So as much weight as in the fastest.
Yeah, in the fastest period. Time.
Yeah.
So there's a big encouragement on this show to really limit your caloric intake and really maximize
your
like exercise and output. And they did a really, really interesting follow-up study with these participants who had basically put themselves, they'd simulated a famine pretty much, right? So they did a follow-up study and they found that all of the participants upon leaving the show had put the weight on or more back on from 6 years after they were in the show. So loads of them had regained the weight they had lost, which is not like super surprising, right? Because you're simulating an extreme environment where, which is not the same as living and working in your everyday life. So it's not that like reflective of the life that you then have to lead when you come off. So it would make weight loss, maintaining the weight loss difficult. But something that they had found was that their metabolism had changed. So they needed less calories to maintain their weight. So say the average person consumes 2000 calories a day and they stay the same weight if they eat the same amount of calories. It's very complicated, but it's a general idea. Whereas they found if you severely restrict in something like a famine or like The Biggest Loser, your calorie intake could decrease to the point where you put on weight much easier. So you only need like 600 calories to
so
be your weight.
Basically, if you then go back to eating like a normal average person, you're going to take more weight because
you would put more weight on even if you're eating less than the average person.
Okay.
So this is really interesting because it's a lot of its kind of epigenetics has been shown to play a huge part in our metabolism. It's linked to obesity and to diabetes. And there's a lot of studies showing that yo-yo dieting, which is yo-yo dicing is when you restrict and then binge and then restrict and then binge, affects the little notes in the margins and makes it harder to keep your weight maintained.
Okay.
So that's like an example of how epigenetics would work in real time. And there's other evidence that like fetuses in the womb, whilst the mother is experiencing a famine, are impacted for their entire lives. They actually have a lower risk of developing colon cancer. And I want to caveat what I'm saying is like the way our bodies regulate weight is extremely complicated, and it's not just down to the epigenetic tags on our DNA.
Mm-hmm.
It's down to a lot of things. It's multifactorial. It's not as simple as like I forget, like, don't eat for a day, mm-hmm. and then they write the note in the margin, and then you're gonna put on weight because your body's in starvation mode. It's not how it works. It's the whole system of our bodies is like too complicated to pin to one thing. But these epigenetic tags are very real, and they do cause differences in your gene expression, and they are influenced by your environment. So that's like a anecdotal mm-hmm. piece as to how this would function every day.
Yes, I have a. I don't know. I'm quite ignorant in the matter, so I'm gonna I think like I mean I'm also just thinking about it, so it's not fully formed ideas.
Okay.
But I guess my question is, and I understand that it's like not as easy as just like thinking about these notes in the margin, for example, for this weight loss, but I guess it can be applied to anything.
Yeah.
But I guess you were mentioning when you were talking about The Biggest Loser, I think it's called. You were saying how over this period, which I don't know how long it is, but I assume it's like order of weeks and months. They lose, and then like they lose the weight, and then it was shown that like they gain more weight because, you know, they kind of got used to eating less and like to this famine situation. But so I guess like these notes can be changed quite quickly. Like I understand that it's not all about epigenetics, but like
So these notes can be changed quite quickly based on your choices, and as I'll come on to later, these are like inherited as well,
mm-hmm.
and that's really interesting because it goes cross-generational. But they can be reversed, and there's currently a lot of research going into nutrition choices and how like there's now like a link between our nutrition and our genes, which is crazy because for a long time we thought what goes in your body is fuel.
Mm-hmm.
Fiber is important, sure, but like it doesn't affect, like it can't like affect your body permanently. But things like nutrition over sustained periods can change and reverse. So whether these participants can go back to having a normal caloric intake is still very much under research. A lot of these epigenetics can be reversed. Yeah.
Okay.
So like the really kind of science-y bit, your genetic code, everybody knows like the kind of helix, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what these are is they're these little groups called acetyl groups and methyl groups, and these kind of like tack themselves on to our DNA, right?
Okay.
But they're also wrapped around these things called histones.
Mm-hmm.
So if you imagine your DNA is a piece of string that's wrapped around a protein, so let's say it's a dice. It's like if it was pieces of blue tack sticking to the string or sticking to the dice.
Mm-hmm.
And these affect how your DNA is processed, what proteins are coded for. If they're coded, sometimes it might do this thing called silencing, where
mm-hmm.
a protein isn't even coded for
because
it's got a methyl group on. So yeah, it is it's a complicated process, but something like The Biggest Loser is where you can really see this concept in reality,
mm-hmm.
Which is very interesting, I think.
Okay, so sorry, just for me to see if I understand. So would it be like, okay, this is a very easy example, but okay, let's say attached to my DNA, there is a note on the margin, like my epigenetic, which is like, I don't know, this is stupid, but like, I don't know, she doesn't like milk chocolate, right? And so I guess there is epigenetic saying, oh, she doesn't like it. She doesn't build it. Like, is it?
Well, so yes, it would be like, oh, they can't code the protein that means that she likes the taste of chocolate. So she okay. didn't like the taste of chocolate. Okay. Yeah, so that's kind of, I've explained to you sort of what epigenetics is in our individual lives, but it kind of goes a bit deeper. As I kind of alluded to earlier, it's cross-generational. So the way we act affects our gene expression. And potentially for a very long time, as mentioned in the Biggest Loser studies. So you are familiar with Charles Darwin. I think most people are. Father of evolution.
Very funny if I said no.
We're all familiar. Well, I'd hope that we're all familiar with the concept that you inherit your genes from your parents, right? So mm-hmm. your nose is from your parents, your ears are from your parents. But something that there was kind of like another evolutionary theory from a different scientist called Lamarck. Do you know Lamarck? Have you heard of Lamarck? Did you do that in school?
Maybe. No.
So, do your parents have any scars? Do they have any funny stories attached to those scars? Or,
yeah, I mean, they for sure have scars. I don't know. I can think of one with my dad. It's not very funny. Yeah. It's very extreme, though.
Oh no! Go on. I'm interested. It's very
it's story. Very dramatic, actually. Like it was just like my dad when he was young. Like everyone in Italy has a Vespa when you're young. Right?
Is that a thing?
Yes. It's like that's the easiest so cool. way you can go around. Basically, he was like driving around the Vespa, like, you know, on his Vespa with some friends, and he fell. Not from the Vespa. I think like the Vespa was parked, and like, but he was like talking to his friends while they were parked, and he fell. And this like friend of his decided it was gonna be a good idea. Not sure why. To drive over him.
What?
Yes, it's insane. I don't know how he's alive.
How old was he when this happened?
I have no clue. I imagine like it would be like maybe 16 or 17.
Also,
it's quite old.
That's quite bad.
Yeah. I think it's just like when you just get the license.
And they
went over his like head. And so he has a massive scar on his head.
Wait, so did he have like surgery? Or was he alright?
No, I think maybe now he would. But it happened, you know, like 50 years ago in Italy.
Is your dad of sound mind?
Yes, I think he's fine for having someone ride over him with a mask.
Oh, man. That, so is how big is the scar?
It's quite big. Maybe like 4 centimeters.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay, so with Lamarck, he thought that changes that occurred in your parents' lives were also transferred down to you the way that genetics are. So if your dad was removing my Vespa, random example, you might inherit that scar. Oh, which, okay. To be fair, you have a big head of hair, so.
Yeah, but I would have a bald patch.
You would,
and
yeah.
I'm very glad I don't have a bald patch.
Does he have a bald patch? Does he have that?
He is bald.
He is bald, okay. Yeah,
yeah, so it's a big bald patch.
The scar is bigger than the big bald patches in his head.
Yeah.
So, if your dad got run over by a Vespa, you would inherit the scar from being run over by a Vespa. Or say your parents got some very unwise tattoos, you would inherit those tattoos. And this is obviously not true, right? It's pretty accepted that that is not what happens. But epigenetics brings in this whole new perspective, because they have found in research that you do inherit changes based on your parents' behavior. So it's not only do you do marathons, do you do drugs, it's did my parents do marathons, did my parents do drugs. These little notes in the margins of the cake recipe are passed on, and there's a lot of research into this. It's still not super well defined, but an example of this, we studied this in my first year of university, is cocaine use. So when you do cocaine, interactions happen with the groups I mentioned earlier. So your histones, your DNA. Actually, I read a good paper by Sadri Vakili. There's a lot of papers that I read for this, and I'll put them all in the notes. But this paper specifically showed that it interacts with spermatogenesis, so the way that your sperm is made. So because it affects the way the sperm is made, it is passed on to your offspring. And interestingly, this only seems to occur to paternal. So your mum can do all the cocaine she likes, you can let her know. And if she has kids, it won't, well, I don't want to say that for sure, but they've found that generally it tends to be fathers that influence, because it influences spermatogenesis mm-hmm. specifically. And it can affect addictive behavior in your children. So it changes you so that you are more prone to addictive behavior, but it also changes your children so that you're more prone to addictive behavior. Okay. And I do have to caveat this. Cocaine use and addictive mechanisms are really multifactorial. No one gene can be pinned to addiction. And if your dad is a cocaine addict, you might be more likely to be exposed to addictive substances. So it's quite a hard thing to control for. But they have found evidence of changes. When your dad does cocaine, you are more likely to be an addict due to epigenetic tags.
Okay.
So yeah.
I feel that, I don't know, maybe it's just me, but I guess it's something like I would have imagined that would be the case.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of like when you say it, it seems pretty obvious, right?
Yeah.
In a lot of ways, like we talk about so much stuff being passed down from our parents. So I feel the need to say that it, at the moment, the evidence we found of multi-generational changes, it's only if it affects this process called meiosis. So, do you know what meiosis is?
Is it the division of the cell?
Yeah, so there's mitosis and meiosis.
Okay, yes.
Mitosis is the division of cells in your body every day. Okay, so, like, yes. If you get a cut, mitosis is necessary to heal the cut. But meiosis is done in your reproductive system. Okay. So it's reproductive specific. And that's why it's passed down, because it affects your reproductive cells, not your regular cells. So really interesting. Your parents' choices affect you. And I don't feel like people should panic from this. Like if your dad did a couple wild nights out in his youth, you're probably all right. And it's very complicated and it can be reversed and it can be rewritten. But it's really interesting. It's new emerging research, and it's kind of amazing that these things can have such a lasting impact.
Yeah, it's pretty impressive. But I don't know, I guess the idea that it can be reversed, like, I know I'm putting it easily, it kind of takes a burden off my shoulder as well, you know?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Like, not that I want to become an addict or something. But
you can do loads of cocaine and you're fine. Don't worry.
Especially because I'm a woman.
choose a good dad. And then you'll be all right. Yeah, so it's, Lamarck was right in some ways.
I guess the idea of the podcast is that we're talking about something like, science is interesting, but it's kind of also critical at the moment. So I was wondering if there are any, because of course it's very cool, and like I can see how from a very naive point of view, like this could be applied if we have all the research money in the world.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
like how are we using it if we are?
It's, so this is the point, right? So there's all this research. It's great. It helps us understand a lot of things. So maybe it could provide a bit more forgiveness to people. Specifically, you know, people are very fat shamed in our society, and I feel like maybe understanding metabolic adaptation might help us in giving some more grace to people. It can be used for that in like a sociological perspective if we expanded our understandings, but it can also help us understand who's more prone to disease. So preventative measures.
Yeah, you were really mentioning about cancer, I think, at the very beginning.
Yeah, so there are also, so we can help discover who might be more at risk, but also it's being used actively in cancer. So they're trying to develop treatment for these epigenetic tags. As I mentioned, they're these little methyl groups or acetyl groups. You can create things that might remove them from the DNA that might affect their transcription. Transcription is like the creation of the proteins. So we can use our knowledge of this, and this is a really hot topic in cancer treatment at the moment. So we could use our knowledge of the methylated and acetylated areas of our DNA and target the epigenetic regulators. So we could demethyl them and increase expression of a gene that is repressed by epigenetic factors. So there's actually two examples of epigenetic treatments that are currently on the market. So romidepsin and vorinostat are histone deacetylase inhibitors. So these work in T-cell lymphomas, and basically, like I described before, the histone is what the DNA wraps around.
Mm-hmm.
So these deacetylase inhibitors might keep the acetyl groups on. Having a methyl group and a acetyl group on a DNA isn't a bad thing, necessarily. Mm-hmm. So in this instance, it would be they want to keep the acetyl groups on the histone cancer treatment. And this has been used in T-cell lymphomas. It hasn't gained a huge amount of traction in solid tumours, but this has been on the market for quite a while. The paper I read on this is from 2010.
Can I ask a very maybe naive question? But
please
do. Because we don't, like, when we do testing in physics, so stuff is just like kind of prototyping, right?
Yes.
And I'm wondering how this translates, like what testing means in biology. Like, are we testing on humans?
So in clinical research, this is like partially what I do in my day job, is they generally do animal studies.
Mm-hmm.
They'll do efficacy studies. So this is something called preclinical, where they'll do research in cell lines or in animals to see how the efficacy of the developed drug. So in this instance, maybe a demethylation target. And then they will go into humans eventually, but it has to go through a lot of testing.
Yeah, I can
imagine. And a lot of drugs, I think only 1 in 8 drugs make it to market of all the ones that are being looked into. So it's got a very low success rate. Yeah, so that's a kind of roundup.
Thank you so much. It's so interesting. I think everything has to do with the body and biology is just...
Well,
it's kind of like magic to me, because I haven't done it in ages.
That's what I knew about physics. I'm excited to hear about dark matter, which is your field of research, right?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, I'm very excited. It's
coming in the next episode.
Yeah, so tune in. Tune in next week. Yeah. Right, well, thank you for listening.
Yeah, thank you for explaining to me.
You're welcome. Anytime.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode today. You can follow us on Instagram @spectral_science.